What I'd like you to do right now is I'd like you to follow this finger, okay?
Okay.
Just follow this finger. Relax and just focus on my finger.
Okay.
I'm going to keep moving this finger, and I want you to keep following this finger. Mm-hmm. Feeling any pain in your frontal lobe?
No.
Any nausea?
No.
Keep following the finger.
Okay.
Focus. Focus on the finger. Ignore me, but focus on the finger.
Okay.
Focus on the finger. Ignore me, but focus on the finger.
Okay.
And now this finger. And now this finger. Keep following my finger.
Hey everybody, this is your host Adam Chartoff of FilmWax Radio. Thank you so much for listening to this episode. It's episode number 291 of the podcast. This episode is also dedicated to, I guess, South by Southwest. It seems like ancient history at this point. It's true. I went to South by Southwest back in March. It's already May. However, it takes me, this kind of one-man operation, a lot of time to get everything done. And I have so many guests that come on, as you know, and you know, they're usually some time-sensitive project they're working on, like a film or a fundraiser or something. And so I have to get the show up at a certain time, and then it puts off putting other shows. This was a little less time-sensitive, but just as important as anything else. And so this episode has a number of guests that I met with at the South by Southwest. So in that group is Robert Machoyan and Rodrigo Ojeda Beck with their film God Bless the Child, which is a lovely film, currently still in the festival circuit. It's basically Robert, who is, again, half the filmmaking team here, is the dad of all these kids, and he shot this movie with his kids. It's a fiction film. It's not a documentary, but it is shot sort of documentary style. It's one of these films where the kids are on their own and kind of create this magical space, you know, and it's not like it's all so ideal, but it is a beautiful film told from definitely a children's perspective. Their oldest sister, I guess, is on the cusp of young adulthood, I suppose you could say. And she sort of has to take care of them over the course of this day, this summer day, where because there is no parents around it. That's part, of course, the story. Where are these parents? And then after my very brief conversation with Robert Machoyan and Rodrigo Ojeda Beck, the next segment is with Todd Rohal and Kent Osborne regarding their film that they collaborated on called Uncle Kent 2. Now, the original Uncle Kent was more less typical post-mumblecore indie low-budge comedy, again starring Kent Osborne playing a modification of himself. It was directed by Joe Swanberg. It came out about 5 years ago. It also had Jennifer Prediger in it and Josephine Decker, and it was very funny. And I think it was more kind of almost arbitrary and ironic that he decided that Kent Osborne and Todd and Joe Swanberg decided to collaborate on a sequel of all their films. I don't know this one. But anyway, so it's really funny, and it goes off in direction that you really can't predict. But it is full of funny moments. And Todd is a friend who made a film a few years back called Catechism Cataclysm, which I really liked, and I met him after that. And he's made a few bigger budget films since, or a couple of major budget films since. And he's sort of back now with this very, very unusual, unpredictable comedy called Uncle Kent 2. And Kent Osborne, he's an actor. He was in one of my favorite Swanberg films not that long ago called All the Light in the Sky. I've talked about that film quite a bit. Ken had a role in that with Jane Addams and Sophia Takal and a bunch of other folks. So I'm real excited to finally have Todd and Kent on the show, both first-time guests. In fact, all my guests on this show are here for the first time, including Robert and Rodrigo. And finally, my last guest is Yen Tan. He is an Austin-based filmmaker and designer, graphic designer. I've got to know him the last few years that I've been attending South by Southwest, and it's always great to catch up with him. And on this This time around, he didn't have a brand new film to talk about, but it was fun to talk about his being a filmmaker living in Austin and what that's like. And he's a very respected and beloved guy, and he does also a lot of design for filmmakers as well. He designs a lot of posters, and in fact, this year he did the poster for the Manson Family Vacation, which was one of these Duplass-produced films, and it won the design award. Poster, there is a poster design category, and it was the only one he did. But meanwhile, years ago, he used to do lots of them. Like, he used to do bunches of them. And now he only did one this past year, and of course, it won the award. So that was nice. We'll have Yen Tan on the show. So those are the segments, and we'll pop right into my first one here with Robert Mochoy and Rodrigo Ojeda Beck regarding their film, God Bless the Child. Speaking with Robert Mochoy and Rodrigo Ojeda Beck. Did I say it right?
Yeah.
Great. Oh, great. Okay. I'm so glad Laura Heberton, who is one of the producers, insisted on my watching it.
Oh, nice.
Not that she had to really insist, but there's always so much to do and see and all that. So just the fact that she did, and then I watched it, and I said, I regret watching it home because now I know I should have watched this on the big screen. It's clearly one of those, right? Rodrigo, it's like...
Yeah, it's always better to see a
gorgeous
screen,
looking film.
But yeah, glad you saw it anyways, you know.
Yeah. And it did facilitate this happening, which is the good news, right?
Yeah, totally.
The name of the film is God Bless the Child. And what are your roles?
We're co-directors.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
As well as co-editors.
Right.
Co-almost everything, but Robert.
Robert.
Robert also wrote the film with his wife.
I see. Very good.
And he operated.
You're the dad.
He's the dad.
Robert, yeah, Robert, you're the dad, right?
Yes, I am the dad.
You're the dad. But not that the dad is in the film.
No, he's not.
Conspicuously absent, as is the mother.
Yes.
I'm just going to... What I'll do is I'll start setting it up, a little bit of the synopsis, and you jump in and
great.
When you want to. We basically are following five children, brothers, four brothers and one older sister. Did I have that right?
Yeah.
And over the course of what looks like maybe a day or two, like maybe overnight, or is it 2 days?
I'd say probably a day.
Okay.
Day and night.
Yeah. And their adventure, their misadventures, I suppose, but it's just watching children be, which is really...
Yeah, that's something we were wanting to capture, you know. I think far too often in films, children, due to the fact that they are kids, get really stereotyped, you know, really dumbed down, really one-dimensional. They're always excited or sad, but they don't have too much dimension. And that's all something we wanted to do, something to bring to this film in particular, was come and make a movie with five kids, but really show their personality, show kind of the layers and that dimension as characters rather than just being trivial one-liners in a
yeah.
ensemble or a film, you know. But can they carry it and that kind of stuff.
Right. And if that weren't enough, they're actually siblings in real right. life. And there, several of them are toddlers. And one is just barely a toddler. Like just...
Yeah.
Right, Robert?
The youngest was a year and a half when we started shooting. Then his, you know, the brother next to him, Boo, is four. He was four at the time that we were shooting. And then...
Wait, so the youngest again is?
Was a year and a half.
A year and a half. So yeah. Just barely a
yeah,
toddler.
They were very young when we started shooting.
And now they're all like college age. And, he just broke into cold sweats.
Yeah.
Well, it's good to be making such big Hollywood commercial films in anticipation of they're going to college.
So that's true.
Good news. Good for you. they're beautiful, first of all.
Thank you.
And I guess the premise is they're being raised by a single mother, but she's not there. And
yeah.
the question is where she is, and that caused a lot of anxiety with the oldest, the daughter, who's, I guess, junior high school or high school?
Yeah, she was 12 years at the time. That's
wow,
the age
wow.
that we...
Okay.
I mean, things worked out. I mean, story-wise, we were interested in that age. And why mm-hmm. were we interested in that age was because that's the age where you can start babysitting. Like, legally, you can mm-hmm. start babysitting.
Yes.
But the question is always, like, is that the good time, you know? So there's this she has the ability to be responsible, but not in the sense, like, if she were 16, this would be a different movie. And so that the age was appropriate for her because it needed to play into her character.
I understand that, and it's a good point because at 12, she's having to cope with growing up faster than is organic for her. So that adds to the tension of her character and the situation because they're all clearly growing up too fast.
Yeah, we wanted there to be this responsibility of, you know, the story came from a story my father had told me, and what we were interested from that story was this maturity that's placed upon children. And we say before they're ready, as a society, I think we're...
Fair enough, yeah.
You know, you look back to, like, child labor and the responsibility those kids took on, and you're, I mean, it wasn't okay, obviously, but you're also blown away at the responsibilities
how much
they were able to handle.
Yeah.
And so there's that kind of aspect. Is like, is she responsible enough to take care of them? Yes, she is. Has she been put in that situation over time? That's where she's. That's where we are when we meet her, is that she's in a place where she's doesn't want to take on that responsibilities, but those responsibilities are becoming more and more are required of her.
Yeah, and she happens to love them.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Which is, you know, another motivation to make sure they're okay.
Yeah, I think that's one of those things, like, when she finds out she has to take care of them, I mean, she's not stoked, but at the same time, she's not completely destroyed either, and as the day progresses, you know, things do become more stressful, but, you know, at the same time, we don't have too many tragedies, necessarily, in the film, so it's, we wanted to have that openness to kind of, you know, I think we wanted to show she can handle it, but at the same time, it's not an ideal situation, by any means.
I appreciate how in the credits, the credit for filmmaking goes to a group of people because you're not necessarily distinguishing on the public face of the film about
who's
like a hierarchy.
Yeah, you know, I think I was talking with this with Kirsten, who worked on this project just the other day. She did everything. I think she ended up getting something a little more specific, but you know, it's one of those things that we learn so much from. Bigger films. We learn so much from bigger films, but yet I don't think that knowledge necessarily translates when you do things on a smaller scale. So on set, most of our films, Robert and I just work, just the two of us. And so it's always hard to divide who did what because we all wear different hats. And so when you're working so small, all these people really are doing everything. And so then how do you break that up in these kind of standard, you know, credits as, well, you were the director, you were the editor, you were the cinematographer.
I guess it's just the conventions of the business kind of almost, you know, force your hand in that way because, like, you know, you're filling out the IMDb thing or you're filling out the, I don't know, submission forms on for festivals and they're all saying, we need a director, we need that, you know.
Right.
And you guys are saying, well, we're kind of bucking against that a little bit because we...
Yeah. I think so. We want to allow everybody's work to be acknowledged equally.
We do it the best we can.
Yeah.
You know, like you said, eventually we get forced into defining positions. But for us, we just want to make sure the statement's made that our producer is just as valuable as we find ourselves. You know, it's like maybe we're the technical editors, but we definitely send it off to every one of the people that are listed. And they go like, yeah, that scene's not working. So we remove it because we're like, yeah, that's true. So are they not editors as well? Well, to some degree they are as well. They're helping with the process.
Right.
And it's understandable. At some point they're definitive. We have to define them down the line. But for Rodrigo and I, it's important where we can control it. We want to make sure it's defined in the way that everyone knows how much they're valued.
And you guys premiered. Where'd you have your world premiere? Was it
here last night?
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you.
How'd that go? And I understand all the Graham kids were here.
They were all there.
Wow.
You know, we were worried they were going to crap out, you know, as
you did a Kickstarter, right?
We did do a Kickstarter. Yeah,
I think I noted that. I saw that somewhere.
We did a great Kickstarter.
To bring the family.
Yeah, just to bring the kids out. You know, they just worked so hard. They sacrificed their whole summer to work on the film. We pushed them really tough, and they did a great job. And then just running a little short on money. So it was really blown away. You know, huge thank you to everybody who donated to it. We were able to raise that money really fast, which made making the decision to bring them out a lot easier. And they had a freaking blast. You know, they've been tearing up South By in a way. I haven't seen, you know, 18-year-olds do, man. Yeah, you know, you gotta watch out for these kids.
I can't. I've run past them. I don't know. I think I should. You know, and recognize.
You saw a blur and some blur. Chaos.
Hey, I recognize that blur and chaos. And so they were at the Q&A, and I'm gonna guess
Nobody was coming after the 12-year-old. You know.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think, something that was really exciting for us was the fact that. Like Rodrigo had said, they worked so hard that it was important for us to be able to have them on stage and have an audience looking back at them. And
yeah, to get the context, why we made this and what happens with it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, for a four-year-old to sacrifice his entire summer, I think it was important for him to see an audience appreciate what he had worked towards and for him to understand the value. I mean, from a father's standpoint, for my children to understand the value of their hard work was a huge blessing. The fact that Kickstarter people allowed us to be able to bring them out. I mean, yesterday, we took them out to ice cream.
That was in the Kickstarter.
Their after party was Barry Austin. But they were able to get as big of ice cream as they wanted, they indulged, like maybe grown-ups indulge in other ways. But they were able to see that value, and that was a real proud moment, I think, for us.
The name of the film is God Bless the Child, and it's created by and Robert Matroyan, Rodrigo Ojeda Beck, Robert John Thomas, Laura Heberton, Kristen Anderson, and Rebecca Graham. Whew. And stars a whole lot of kids, the course of a summery day. It's a beautiful film. Well, good luck with the trajectory of the film and your next festival, wherever that may be.
Thank you so much.
Uncle Ken 2 will make its next appearance, if you call it that. It will screen next. How's that? At the Maryland Film Festival, I guess, or it will screen multiple times. The festival is between May 6th and the 10th, so if you're in the Maryland, if you're in Maryland, I guess it's in the Baltimore. I guess it's in Baltimore. Go check out Uncle Ken 2 and have a blast. And it also brings back Jennifer Prediger into the film. You have a lot of cameos by many past guests of this podcast. So is it a little insider clubby of me to highlight it? I don't know. I've always wanted Todd, who I think is a really talented filmmaker. I always wanted Kent Osborne on the show. So this was an opportunity to get them both on together. And it came out pretty funny as a result. Listen right now.
Plug in your headphones.
I'm a moron.
Plug in your headphones.
That's the very sexy Todd Rohl.
I listened to your Robert Longstreet interview when I was on a
holy flight. Crap. Oh, yeah?
It was great. It's fun listening to an interview where, you know, both people, you know? It was just like sitting and listening to your friends talk or something. It was like, this is the best flight.
That was nice of you to do that. Did you laugh aloud at certain times?
It was nice of me to listen to it.
And then just
I
wasn't doing
out of kindness. I generally wanted to listen.
Oh, no. I'm saying mentioning it.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, well, you're welcome.
And referring to me as your friend.
Oh, yes. Well, we are friends.
Thank you. I feel that way, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was great. It was late, which was nice for Robert. It was like, it's good time to get him at the end of a... So he's tired, but he's also kind of hyped up because he's been on coffee for two or three days straight making this movie, The Missing Girl, which... That was a great experience, by the way. I podcasted last month from the set of a film for the first time. Like, I went to the film for a day, an afternoon or whatever, and I just interviewed all the key folks from the film, and it was great. Unfortunately for the film so far, they didn't get into the festivals they were hoping to so far. But now it looks like Toronto is a good possibility, so we're hoping. And Robert was the lead. Robert Longstreet was the lead in that. Oh, okay. I know he has a cameo in Uncle Kent 2. Sitting with Todd Rohl and Kent Osborne. And just housekeeping.
burping.
No, I don't mind that at all. You can do anything you want regarding body noises. But
no one, farting into the mic.
You can fart into it.
Q&A, and somebody would ask a question, and somebody would be like, just rip one, put the microphone into their butt, and just rip one into it, and be like, that would be
early John Waters. That could have happened.
He's too classy
now.
If it was like, if it was Adrian Brody at the Q&A for inappropriate comedy, and he goes, they're just like, that's how I'm going to handle this press.
I have a new GF, and we're at
Kent.
This is Kent. We're at the stage. It's been like 5 months, so I started farting.
Congratulations.
Yeah. But she's actually really impressed with, because she'll be like, what do you want for dinner? And then I'll just fart. And then she's like, laughs every time. And then she's like, I don't know. How do you do it? How do you do that? You have the best timing.
You hold them, on to them.
And
Well, it's interesting because I made a few manipulations in my diet, not because. Yeah. Like, I cut out a certain amount of dairy, and also, like, beer. Like, I drink much less beer, which I'm not recommending to you guys. And I find I just don't have gas anymore. So it's specifically, I know what was causing it to happen. And so it was a great surprise. I could have done this years ago or not done this in the first stages of my relationship and not been uncomfortable.
Yeah.
You know, or worried.
I stopped eating fried chicken for a month. And, my apartment was so quiet. And I couldn't figure out what was going on.
Stop eating fried chicken for a month.
That's as long as I could go.
Yeah, that's a big habit.
Yeah,
from cut out a whole month.
It's funny.
We went to Hooters last night for our for our after screening party, and we had fried pickles and all that stuff. And man, it was like. My body just was just like, what did you just do?
Yeah, I mean, I'm still in shock.
It was crazy. Yeah.
But Todd, you're from North Carolina? Where are you from?
Ohio.
Ohio. Yeah. I'm sorry. Okay, so I was going to say, because in the South, there's a lot of fried. That's like a part of the diet. So maybe they even build up a tolerance for it. I don't know.
No, I mean, I was raised with chilies, and that was like our good restaurant. Oh. So I know everything.
What part
fried
of Ohio?
In Columbus. Yeah, so it's like not even classy fried stuff. It's like,
I've been there, though. I was in Columbus 2 summers ago.
Oh, yeah.
For a visit, yeah.
And it's like, I don't know.
Talking to the mic, though.
We shouldn't talk too much about.
No. Hooters, what are you talking about? This is what we're talking about.
Their naked wings are superior to any, Chili's or Applebee's or any airport wings or even, high-end wings. Because they're good. They're really good.
Really?
Yeah.
All right. You know, what's good about this is this could actually lead to a sponsorship. So keep going, Kent.
Yeah. Right. Oh, sorry. Okay.
But we're going to plug the shit out of
it. I have to say Hooters 4 more times, though. Contractually.
Right.
The Waitress is new Adventure Time last night. And, Kent had, it was the greatest moment that this waitress recognized him and brought over another waitress. And they were both jumping up and down next to him. Oh. And it was just like,
asking new voices. And
like everyone in the restaurant, all these guys were just like, how did he do? You know, it's just like having two waitresses just bouncing their boobs right next to Ken asking him to do a voice, and he would do a voice, and they would just be like giggling and jumping up and down. And it was just like everyone in the restaurant, all these guys were like
really impressed with you. Yeah. That's actually segues nicely to the film, because in the opening film, the title sequence,
yes,
which is one of the most memorable in my history of seeing thousands of films.
Is it better than Seven? Is it more memorable than the titles in Seven?
I don't even remember that movie.
Thank you.
So, yeah.
It was Brad Pitt jiggling
his man boobs. How do you, the farting in front of the girlfriend.
Sure.
How do you, I really am curious because I don't think, and I probably could do that too. I know I could. I could do the bounce a little bit. I'm not proud, but nor am I ashamed. But I'm wondering, but you know that at least 20 or 30 people are going to see that movie. And how? Yeah. No, but I mean, how do you?
The part of my brain that's supposed to be ashamed or embarrassed isn't working properly or something.
Is that a liberating thing, or you don't even deal with it? It's not even liberating anymore.
I guess it's not like it makes me feel better, but. But I do. I like making people laugh, and
it's funny.
Yeah, I do. I do. Cock tricks, or I used to, before the doctor told me to stop because I had some scar tissue, as was in Uncle Kent 1. There's a reference to that. But I was partying with friends one night. It was 3 a.m, and people were getting tired. And I was like, don't go to bed. And then I was like, look, it's the world's worst puppet show. And I took out my penis and was doing all this. And everyone was laughing. And so that I like watching people, laugh.
Right.
I don't care how the laughs come. And.
Mm-hmm.
But then also a couple years later, there was Puppetry the Penis on Broadway. And so I was ahead of my time, or
right.
part of the zeitgeist.
Oh, you're that, a pioneer yeah. of penis comedy.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a penis documentary. It's called the Dickumentary.
Oh, really?
I haven't seen it
About yet. Puppetry of the Penis? Or?
No.
Oh, just about the penis.
The history of the penis. Yeah. I think it's, anyway, footnote.
But yeah, I was making Todd laugh in the hotel room in San Diego. I was bouncing around, and that he was filming me. Yeah.
It's great sequence. It's so, and I love it. And then I also love that already you're winking to the camera. Like, in other words, it's like the shot from the outside of the house, and you're doing that move is called, but if there is, it's
yeah,
a,
there is a name for it.
There must be. It's like almost like Chuck Berry's duck walk.
Yeah,
it's similar.
A little Groucho Marx, maybe.
Right? Yeah. And, this is taking up a substantial amount of the conversation, and you look, you smile at the camera, which is awesome. It's really it's a great sequence. Was that at the end of the 12-minute mark, or I can't remember?
The 12 minutes ends when Joe says goodnight, and I bike off.
Right. So
then, everything after that is Todd.
Right. I got it. So, the point being that Uncle Kentu Swanberg is officially the director of the first 12 minutes of the film. And then Todd, you take over.
Yes.
And it's a very, very meta film. You could say that.
It's a very, very meta film.
Thank you for saying it. But it is true because I wrote notes to this part because I'm such a geek and I know all of the back history of all this. So having seen Uncle Kent, the original Uncle Kent, was a Joe Swanberg movie loosely based on Kent Osborne,
yes,
an actor and an animator or a cartoon.
Yeah, yeah. So someone who works in animation, I guess.
Okay,
I'm doing
animation professional.
Yeah, I'm doing storyboards in the opening. Yeah, of Uncle Kent 1.
Yeah, and it's loosely based on your real life.
Yes, yes, okay. And based on a comic. I did a comic about. I met this woman at a film festival, and I thought we were kind of flirting, and then. Mm-hmm. About an hour into it, she mentioned her husband.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, what? And then and then she ended up coming to L.A. She was coming to L.A., and I like that you're holding the microphone.
I know. It's like a mic stand.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a Todd Rohall original mic stand.
But she...
I could take these.
Yeah. So she came to L.A. and, like, crashed at my place mm-hmm. for a few days, and it was very confusing, and I didn't know... what was going on.
Yeah.
So I did a comic kind of loosely based on that, where the comic took some liberties, and then, Joe really liked the comic, so he wanted to do something.
Oh, I see. So it's kind of like actually a movie based on a graphic novel.
Yeah. It was a pamphlet comic. It wasn't a...
Yeah.
But, so I think the first idea Joe had was I don't know if you remember the scene where I like, try to steal pictures off her camera, and then I accidentally delete them, and so I break her camera. Instead of telling her that I did
Oh,
that,
that was in the original?
That was in the original. Yeah,
vaguely, no.
And that was the first idea Joe pitched to me. He's like, I have this idea that I want to do, and I think it could be, you know, which is weird because, that's something that never happened. Or I don't think I would do.
Oh, I see.
I think I would look at the camera. If in that situation, if she was taking a shower, I would look at the camera and look at the pictures. Yeah. I don't think I would try to steal them, so.
Hand the mic because I want Todd to jump in, too.
You're done, Kent.
Not by a long shot.
Can you edit that story out?
Not one. Well, in fact, I'm going to build on it. Actually, I did once go, I was at a beer garden in Park Slope, one summer, several years back, and I met.
That was Mark Hamill. Mark Hamill does.
He's back in shape for the new Star Wars. I'm glad to see him. Got drunk, and she lives nearby. She says, you want to come back? We go back to her. Now you're paying attention. We go back to her apartment, and she says, excuse me a minute. She goes into the bathroom or another room, and her camera's right there. And I go into the camera, and I'm looking at the photos, and I'm going through them, and there are, like, dozens and dozens of photos. It's all of her cat. Like it's all about just her cat. So I was like, shit, how do I get out of here? And then, I couldn't. She came back in the room, and she's sitting on the couch, and I make a pass at her. And she would not put down her beer. Like, she had a beer in her hand, and she wouldn't put it down. I tried to get her to, she wouldn't do it. So, that was me. I was trying to, I'm very out of my comfort zone in that kind of environment. I don't even do one-night stands normally. But for me, Todd, tell me.
Can you edit that story out, too?
That I will, actually will. It'll be a long beep sequence.
Yeah.
And then you'll, like, till you say
just
that.
Just put a song in there. Yeah. Mix up, yeah.
Yes.
Play two Princes.
So, do you want to pick it up? Because maybe you should describe the rest of the film. Now, I've said Joe Swanberg directed the first part, which is Kent approaching your friend Joe Swanberg, playing himself, obviously. And you want it, the phone. And you want to make a sequel to Uncle Kent.
Correct, yes.
All right. Now, here's the question. And Joe thinks it's a bad idea. He doesn't want to make it. So he tells you, and it's...
Yeah, he doesn't like sequels. He doesn't think right. There needs to be a sequel. He's interested in making movies with me, but not necessarily a sequel to a movie that he feels was...
Right.
Doesn't need any more, continuation.
Right. And then he endorses the idea of you making it.
Yeah, yeah. There's a little tension in that scene, I think.
It's good.
Which is kind of, that was his first reaction. When I asked him, I said, hey, do you want to do a sequel? And he said, I can't. But he said, but if you have an idea and you want to make it with someone else, like, feel free. He's like, it's your, you don't need my permission, but I'm giving it to you.
I'm taking a little video because I'm trying to get into the better habits of doing of occasionally doing a little video. It's obnoxious of me to do this.
No.
You don't even know me that well, and I'm a little bit. I sometimes have help, but not when I'm here. Like, you know. So.
Do you know my mother just from Facebook or?
Yeah,
life?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know her IRL.
Do you know Paulette No Fracking
Osborne in real life?
No, just through.
Oh, just through Facebook. Through,
some point, and she. I'm pretty sure she friended me.
Yeah, she has a habit of...
Just because... But I was thrilled. You know, like, because I didn't know you yet. I have been following your career because I'm interested. And so it was like... yeah, and she was engaging, too. She would occasionally write something, and it was great.
Yeah.
So it's nice. I love having friends that are... Even if they're not friends. You know what I'm saying? Like, just like I enjoy people that are... generations older, and
yeah, you know. She loves Facebook. And my parents are divorced, and neither of them are remarried. And I remember once I asked her, I said, "Don't you get lonely?" And she goes, "No. If I get lonely, I'll just go out in the street and like sit on a bench and talk to someone."
Wow.
Yeah, and I think that's what Facebook is like. It's, that's her bench,
a virtual bench.
Yeah.
So, but your mom is great, and she and I actually, I was like, oh, I want to connect with Kent Osborne when I'm in South By this year, especially. Because you have a film here, and so I went on, and I actually this time I texted her on Facebook rather, and I said, I think Kent would be, do you have his email? Oh, you can just text him on Facebook. She's protecting
she you.
Even though she's
nice.
Been email, yeah. We've been messaging back and forth over the last couple of years on occasion, and
I was going to say there's a Joe Swanberg movie called All the Light in the Sky.
Sure, I love
Jane
that
Adams.
Movie.
Yeah, it's when I
it's one
when
of my
I
favorites.
Was when I
that's right, you're in that.
I'm in that.
It's a great.
Yeah.
You got to kiss her and
that's right.
Touch her and
yeah. But my mom was an extra in Happiness.
What?
Yeah, you didn't know. and I guess she friended Jane Addams on Facebook.
Oh my god!
And
she's on Facebook.
Yeah. Anyways, but when I met Jane, she said. She goes, I'm friends with your mom, and I was like, oh,
another one.
Yeah, and she's like, your mom's great.
Yeah.
Your mom. It's so great, and I was like, I don't even know if I should tell my mom this. Like,
go to her head.
Yeah, but then there was a real funny moment where Jane and I weren't friends on Facebook. She said, "Well, you should friend me." So I went to, I found Jane Addams, I friended her, and I wrote a little message. This is back when you could leave messages when you friend someone, and I wrote, "Hey, it's Paulette's son," and then Jane's waiting for the friend request to come in, and it's not coming in. She's like, "Did you send it?" And I was like, "Yeah." And then she goes, "Well, it's not coming in. You're making jokes about like CIA monitoring her."
Right.
And after 10 minutes, she's like, "It's I don't something's wrong." And I went and I looked, and the Jane Addams that I was a Jane Addams who used to babysit me when I was a kid.
That's very strange.
And I sent her a friend request and said, "It's Paulette's son."
Lonely.
Yeah.
So lonely.
It was horrible. Horrible. It was the worst time.
Well,
my babysitter that I had a crush on.
I would like to say that Todd Solondz and Jane Addams have both been on this podcast.
Oh, wow.
And now Ken Odbor and Todd Rohal. Yeah. I'm thrilled.
Well, you should get my mom, too, and then you'll have everyone.
Be happy to. I'm going to do a Mother's Day special.
Yeah.
I'm going to have on Todd's mom and your mom.
Yeah.
I'd love to hear some filmmakers' moms, like Todd Solondz's mom, That would be terrific, even if it's a round table.
That's not a bad idea.
What's it like watching your, Like, what's it like going to see Happiness and being like, that's my boy, you know, or like anything like that?
Yeah, his parents, he told me his parents were fairly, very, you know, they were very straight, and but they were very supportive of him. And I think, if I remember correctly, yeah.
I think it's typical. I mean, like, I think that people that do that, so their parents are supportive of them, but it's like, it'd still be interesting to kind of, you know, how do you nurture someone like that? I mean, if you, you know, I think it's good. Yeah.
I just ran into him also because Alexander Rockwell's, you know, Alexander Rockwell, Little Feet, but he did back in the day, he was like, came up with Tarantino and those guys. He was like in that filmmaker group. Anyway, he has a new film, relatively new film called Little Feet. And Todd came to one of the screenings. I was there doing the Q&A.
He still watches movies.
Well, he's, I guess. I and he has something new, but, you know, he was, and I said, well, you know, can I get a picture of you and Alexander together? And then I, like, he just had such an unhappy, uncomfortable look on his face. Solons.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Yeah. But, okay, thanks, guys. Todd, was this a positive experience for you as a filmmaker?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, all I want to do is make movies, you know? Like, I would love to be shooting things all the time. It's just a challenge to, you know, you spend years trying to get things off the ground and stuff. But for this, especially, I mean, Kent called and asked if I want to do it, and I said, yeah, absolutely.
Oh, is that what happened?
Yeah, it was, I mean, without a doubt. We had talked about the idea previously before, you know, and kind of joked about some things. But, you know, it was clearly going to be something, you know. Kent was like right off the bat, like, you know, I want you to do something that's uncompromised. It'll be your thing. You get to do. I mean, he was very much like, I want you to make it yours. I think that's kind of how he put it. And it was. I mean, like, nobody. I mean, you know, we didn't have any money, so it's like nobody could really dictate what we were doing or not doing. But also, it was nice to collaborate because Kent wrote this really great 5-page outline or story, basically, of what the movie is, and everything was there. I mean, it was just like it was clearly.
Yeah,
very funny, and had all these great little gags, and I knew exactly what we were going to do. So it was just like we just kept going back and forth, and I think that's what filmmaking is. When you collaborate with a DP, you collaborate with your casting director. You know, it's like all that stuff is. And so I love that part of the process. Why I like making movies. And so I've never collaborated with a writer on something that's been made. You know, so it was the first time we got to do that, which I would love to do more of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It was terrific.
Yeah. Well, it definitely, by the end, or at a certain point, it's clearly a Todd Rohan film, I'd say. There are a lot of special effects in it. You say you made it on the cheap, but the special effects are kind of funny, but they're very trippy. But they look great. I mean, is that not an expensive thing to do at that level?
I mean, everyone going through high school now is learning all these effects programs and stuff, so you can easily find 20-year-olds that do it, you know. And then there's some more advanced things.
With Asperger's who are willing to work for...
Yeah, I mean, it's like...
Put them in a room and they'll do it till it's over, you know.
Yeah, it's kind of like, I mean, it's... not that a lot of the effects we were doing were easy, but it's just sort of like there are a lot of people that are knowledgeable and that's not super expensive. It's just time for them to do it. So, so just asking favors of different people. But yeah, we had talented people that could... do that, but I wasn't asking too many crazy things. I want to spherize heads and do stuff like that, so it wasn't like not going stretching things too far,
right?
But I think it's a beautiful looking movie.
It is
weird, you know. It's like but I remember as we were shooting, Kent would always say, like, if something got stressful or we couldn't figure something out, Kent would just say, it's Uncle Kent too, guys, like, you know, let's not. And that was like the best standard to just kind of be like, yeah, let's not go too crazy. There's always a solution that's within our range of what we can do or our budget level or something, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's just chock full of course, anyone again familiar with the Swanberg films and Todd Rohan films, there you'll see a lot of friends as cast members, from Steve Little, also known for, of course, his memorable role in Eastbound and Down.
I met Steve. We were both writers on a cartoon called Camp Lazlo.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And I remember when he...
Such great voice for that. I mean...
Yeah, yeah. Well, the creator of that show saw him at the Groundlings and just sort of like...
Oh, is that his background? I keep forgetting that.
Yeah. He was an improv guy. And so the creator, Joe Murray, who's the guy who created Rocko's Modern Life, which was a show that kind of led to SpongeBob.
Mm-hmm.
But he's kind of like really great at finding talent. He saw Steve at this Groundlings thing and just brought him in as a writer.
Mm-hmm.
And he did some voices on that show. But that's when I met Steve. And yeah, then we were working on the show Flapjack together. And that's when he got Eastbound, and Which was pretty exciting. But I remember when you called, you were like, oh my God, that's Steve Little. Like, you're so into Steve Little. Because you had seen, like, early, you know, versions of Eastbound. And so that's kind of, it's kind of great that we both kind of have this, connection with him now.
Yeah.
And, he's a nice guy. We just called him up and said,
what? Well, I think I met him at Steve just for a second. I don't know. But very briefly at your premiere party for Cataclysm for the theatrical, I think, when it had that at the IFC Center.
Yeah, we did a thing at the IFC Center, and that was the night Alex Karpovsky fell into a bag of trash and got arrested.
I was there. That's right, I remember that.
Yeah,
he did get arrested.
And somebody overdosed in the bathroom.
He passed out.
The night of that,
Alex passed out. I remember that now.
Yeah, he fell into a bag of this garbage up front.
Right.
It was a great night.
I didn't know he got arrested.
Yeah, the police came and took him out of there.
That's right. I thought they talked the police out of that.
Oh.
But maybe. You may be right. Anyway, it's a much better story, your version. So, but the Jenny Prediger is in it, who, of course, was in the original Uncle Ken and A Bridge to Wedding, of course, starring with me. No, okay. Jenny Prediger is in it. Larry Levine and Sophia Decal, Robert Longstreet.
Tipper Newton.
Who's Tipper?
Tipper Newton.
She was also in Hannah Takes the Stairs.
Oh,
and
great.
She's very funny. And she was in the original Uncle Kent. Although you can't really see, it's kind of a blink and you'll miss her.
Okay. Yeah.
And she was in LOL, Joe's second movie. Great. And she's a real, she's an amazing personality.
Tipper Newton.
And she should be in a lot more. I feel like there's a sitcom or some TV show that's just like, got to latch onto her and put her in it because she's got such a distinct personality and so funny. Huh. But she was in all Joe's early stuff, but hasn't been in anything recently with him. But she's so funny. Yes, I wanted to put her in there. We were always the unpaid members of Hannah Takes the Stairs. Like, everyone on that movie made money except me and Tipper. And then I was just like, wait, what happened? Why does everybody get checks when it makes something? And Tipper and I would be like, yeah, what's going on? And then one day Tipper got a check in the mail, and I found out I was the only unpaid person.
What was your role on that film?
Oh, I was in it. I was a star. I was a star of that movie.
I don't recall
that. No, the only non-successful person to come out of that cast. It was like
Greta Gerwig,
Mark Duplass, Greta Gerwig, Andrew Bujalski, Ken Osborne,
Rye Russo Young.
Wow.
It is an
all-star
great
cast.
Movies. And I played their boss, Andrew and Ken's boss. My name is Brian Dugis. The only character with a first and last name. And some people got paid money. I got paid in a last name. And so I played their boss, and people have seen that movie. Oh, yeah. So people have seen that movie have never remembered me in it at all. And we were, Kent and I, when we were shooting Uncle Kent 2, we were at this restaurant in LA, and we're sitting there, and this guy, we walk in the door, and this guy looks at us like he wanted to beat us up. And I was like, oh my God, what's going on? And we went and sat at this booth, and the guy comes up behind the waitress, and I was like, oh fuck, here it comes.
Yeah.
And he's like, were you in Hannah Takes the Stairs to Kent? And I was like, wow, this is, and he's like, I just moved to LA and that movie was the inspiration for me wanting to make movies. Like, I saw that and it just changed my life, and I changed my major and went into filmmaking, and now I just moved out here, and seeing you here is amazing. And Kent's like, yeah, he was in Hannah Takes the Stairs too. And he points at me, and the guy looks at me and looks back at Kent, and he goes, you're just like the most terrific, like, it just really, this is a very inspiring moment. And
I was joking or something, but I said, yeah, he's in it too. He just didn't like.
Kent, to get recognized a lot?
Never.
Nowadays,
that was like the only time.
I mean, I would imagine in LA, because it's such a studio town. Like, you know, that maybe the indie scene is a little bit less cohesive, or I don't know. Like in other words, if somebody's into indie films in Austin or in New York City, they might actually recognize you. Like, you might actually get recognized more frequently.
Yeah. Sometimes at a film festival, someone will come up and say, oh, I saw a film that you're in. But not on the street. That was really weird to walk into a restaurant and just have someone at the bar, like, recognize. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know if I would recognize me. If I'd seen the movie, I don't know if I'd be able to remember.
So, were you in Tana?
Hannah Takes the Stairs.
Yes, you were.
Yeah.
That's okay. So, well, I kind of feel like good, because now I think I've had on everybody from that cast on the show, from the film on my show. I think everybody you mentioned, except for Tipper. So,
yeah, Tipper.
We'll see. We'll get Tipper on. And I'll give her a check. I'll say, you know, this is.
Yeah. She's in the scene where Todd's like.
Because even if it's like a few bucks, she would be thrilled. You know,
the scene where you're like, the phone's ringing. Pick it up. It was like an exercise, and she picks. She's like, "Hello." And you're like, "It's Jim Henson." She's like, hello, Mr. Henson. We want you to design a new Muppet. And she goes, it would be an honor.
So funny. That was her.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a great bit.
All improv.
So you guys, I guess, were at the forefront of that. Both of you were there at the beginning of what we was shortly after we became known as
Yeah, I met Joe at South by Southwest. I was staying with my friend Dan Brown, who said, "Oh, I want to go see this movie, LOL." And so we went and saw it, and I liked it a lot. And talked to Joe afterwards, and I remember leaving South by Southwest. I was like, "Oh, I wish I could be in one of his movies because I can do that. I can do that. I can act natural."
Yeah.
And then he asked me to be in Hannah Takes Stairs. Yeah,
that's a terrific.
It was great.
Yeah,
it's a true story.
Have you guys seen Results yet? This is Andrew Jodorowsky's new film.
You saw it?
I did see it, yeah.
Uh-huh. Did you see it here, or did you see you saw
I
did,
it? I saw it earlier, yeah, yeah. Like when he's finishing it here, yeah.
Okay.
So, yes, I love it.
Uh-huh.
I think, yeah, it's like it's such a perfect Andrew movie, yeah. It's, you know, it's like, yeah, I had no idea what to expect with anything. And when I saw Computer Chess, I felt the same way. I saw I think I saw the first cut of Computer Chess, too. It was like a 2.5-hour cut, and it really messed with me. It was crazy.
Yes.
I loved the feeling. And I was just like, I wouldn't change anything and just put it out as 2.5 hours. And he cut another hour of it,
yeah,
I think.
Well,
but it was like,
he's trying to get
so...
a second person to see the movie.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
He did what he had to do. But
I just love everything that he's been doing. It's just like, he's always, you know, like I go into some kind of expectation and then it's just totally thwarted and he comes up with something new.
Well, that movie, and I saw that one, Computer Chess, in True False, late in the evening, and that had a similar effect. And I'm sure I didn't see the 2.5-hour edit, but it also left me feeling very disoriented, or, you know, definitely in a, I was moved, you know.
Yeah.
And I had kind of that same experience, I think, to some degree, seeing Catechism. I really liked that movie a lot. I really liked
thanks.
It. Yeah. And so if you're listening and you haven't seen Cataclysm, you should definitely hunt it out, because it's not so hard to find.
No.
Yeah. Right? Was that Sundance, Alex? Was that, what was that?
It's on, yeah, I think it's on Netflix now.
Yeah.
Or just it's on my Vimeo page.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know. The password's probably password 123.
Which will actually let you, if you remember that password, you can see about 8,000 other films. But Uncle Kent 2, because we're trying to plug this film as well. The majority of the film after that first section follows Kent Osborne to Comic-Con in San Diego, where you're on a business trip for your work, which is, but also, I don't mean to say it's like how you earn your money while you act, because this is actually, the acting is kind of a quasi-sideline, even though you may not describe it that way.
Yeah, I went to acting school.
You did go to acting school.
Yeah, but like back, like
it shows.
25 years ago. Oh, thank you.
when you were in seventh grade or something?
No, I'm 45.
We're peers.
When I was 18, I moved to New York, lived with my mother. We shared a place. And I was going to acting school for 2 years. And then I studied with the Atlantic Theater and like David Mamet. And but I was really bad at acting. I was in a movie called School Ties. I had like 5 lines. And then I moved to LA and I was trying to audition and be an actor. And I was just terrible. I would audition for things. And
so you actually went to LA first to... To
sort of pursue,
acting,
yeah, I was trying to
not animation or
no,
your graphic art.
Nope.
Okay.
Yeah, trying to be an actor.
Yeah,
I was auditioning for things like Karate Kid 3 and
shame you missed
that one. Vanilla Sky, I auditioned for.
Really?
Yeah.
Really.
I was terrible. I would go in auditions and get really nervous and just make dumb jokes and I'd leave and I'd go to my car and just be I'd be doing it better in my car than.
So did you meet Cameron Crowe?
No, it was the casting director.
Makes sense.
Candace Crowell. No.
Okay. It sounds like his, you know, his drag name.
His stage name, yeah.
Yeah.
The funny thing about that was I was acting that day with Wes Craven. He was doing a thing for Sci-Fi, and he was, like, hosting a show where he was showing, like, scary movies. And then I was just a guy named Bob that was, like, tied up in his basement that he was showing these scary movies to. And so I had all this makeup on that made me look like I was, like, had been there for days and hadn't had any sleep. And when I was leaving, I was like, oh, I got to go. I'm sorry. I got to audition for Vanilla Sky. And he went, he's like, well, Kent, do you want me to call over to Paramount and tell them that you're on your way? And I was like, that's okay. No, thanks. Which is probably why I should have quit acting, because I was an idiot.
Yeah.
Like, that would have been amazing. if they're like, oh, Wes Craven just called about this Ken Osborne guy. Like,
right.
But instead I went like happily, like, yeah. No, thanks, Mr. Craven. And then I went to the audition and the woman, the casting director, I walked in, I said, hi. I said, I'm sorry. I just came from a thing and I have horror makeup on. I was trying to say horror makeup. And I said, horror makeup. And she just looked at me like, what?
Yeah, what are you talking about? That reminds me.
And then I didn't get the part because I look so much like Tom Cruise, I think. So
well, there is a similarity.
That was the feedback I gave myself. Yeah. But no, I quit acting. And then my brother, who's an animator, I got into animation kind of through him. He went to school with some people that worked on SpongeBob.
Mm-hmm.
My brother and I made a movie, and so I knew some people through him that worked on SpongeBob, and the creators saw this movie we made and offered me a job as a writer on SpongeBob. So that was how I started in animation in 2000.
Todd, how'd you get started in film?
Since the kindergarten, I said I was going to do that. So yeah,
is that right?
I did short films in forever, and then went to film school.
Mm-hmm.
Made short films. Yeah, I just been making things since I was.
So it was in your DNA or whatever.
Yeah.
Did either of your parents come from that?
No,
world
my dad's
at all?
A gym teacher and my mom was a librarian. Yeah.
Oh, I see it then.
There's no. Yeah, you can see the physical fitness in all the books I've read.
Yeah. I think that Coppola's father was a gym teacher.
Yeah, you know? I think so.
It just was one of those things. And you grew up in Ohio.
In Ohio, Columbus, Ohio.
That's right. Which is
that's the capital.
It's the state capital.
It is. And then you live in Austin, which
now
is
I live here,
the
in
state
Austin,
capital
Texas.
Here. You've lived in any other? Did you ever live in North Carolina? I know you just worked with those crew.
I'm just friends with a lot of the people that went to school here. I almost
Green,
went there, and I didn't apply. I remember having the application and about to fill it out, and I was like, $35, and then didn't send it in. But ended up meeting all those folks that went to that. I would have been in that class, which is crazy. So,
you mean like David Gordon Green?
David Gordon Green, Jeff Nichols. Yeah, like everyone that was in that. Dan McBride, David Wingo was a close friend of David's and Craig Zobel and all that. Like, they were all part of that class. But I met all of them through that, yeah. And it was weird. I went to go see a friend of mine had a short film opening for George Washington at the Hirshhorn when I lived in D.C. for a while.
Oh, right.
And she was like, you should go see this movie that's showing after my short. It's incredible. And I didn't know David, didn't know anything.
Uh-huh.
And went to see it and totally blew me away. I mean, I loved it. And sent him an email, just kind of like we were corresponding. And then I had gotten these other emails from this other guy who was writing about these short films that he really liked of mine. And that was a very close friend of David's, you know. So David knew about my short films. And then
very good.
There's this really weird crossover where we kind of knew of each other's work and people have been telling David about my stuff, and people have been telling me about David's other stuff. It was just a weird kind of, it just sort of, yeah, seemed inevitable that the North Carolina kind of crew I was.
What was your, to. You had a recent short that was really, really great, which I also
It's called Rat Pack Rat.
Rat Pack Rat,
yeah.
Which people can find on.
It's on my Vimeo page, too. Yeah. It's free.
So, yeah, Rat Pack Rat, and the star of that, well, Stephen Little's in that, right? Mm-hmm. But the other star, his co-star in that, who also appeared in other of your work,
is Eddie Rouse. Yeah,
Eddie Rouse.
Yeah, right? And Eddie was in George Washington. He was the dad in that.
Yes.
That was Eddie's first feature role.
Right.
And I saw him that. Yeah, when I saw that at the first time when that was out in 2000, and worked with him on that, and then the other movie, this Nature Calls movie, I put him in, and then he was working on this movie Sweet Cheeks that we're working on putting together, but he passed away in December.
Oh, is it? Where's Sweet Cheeks at? Because I know that's something, a project that's been booming.
We'll hopefully be shooting it this year. Who knows?
Okay.
Maybe we'll listen to this and it won't be. Who knows?
So you're saying is that the Eddie Rouse role, and this is me psychophantically saying, it's available. You could maybe rewrite it. That's your problem, figuring it out. I'm just saying I can make that. There's much anticipation since Richard's wedding. So for me to come back to the screen.
Wow, that's a very desperate role to kind of step into. A different way to do it. But no, Eddie's a hard one to replace. To, yeah.
No, I know.
So
I
it's been,
I wouldn't
it's
really.
Been rough. I mean,
yes.
I, you know, we talked about it for a lot, you know, for years. We've been talking about it. I wrote it for him. And,
I'm sorry.
And so he's, it was always something. Yeah, I talked to him about a week before he died, you know, and, you know, it was just this kind of thing where it's like, we're going to make more movies. We're going to be doing this. We're going to, you know, and, I mean, but he lived a rough life. I mean, he was, he had all kinds of stories, so, he was an incredible, incredible performer and actor, deeply missed, because it's, there was a lot more to do still. Other people had plans for him for a lot of other movies, too, so.
Well, I'm sorry. It was a loss. And, you know, he's just really one of those great personalities. Like, who is that guy? And then you're really, he's compelling to watch. And then when you see him in something else, it's like, wow, it's Eddie again, you know? So it's great to see him in Rack Pack Rack. And, yeah, so that's, and then we'll look forward to Sweet Cheeks.
Yeah.
Hopefully in 2016 or something like that.
Yeah. In the future someday.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Kent, you got anything else? I don't know if we did enough do.
No. Kent 3 is going to come out next year.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
Is Kent 2, is that like the first indie sequel potentially? Or even though it's really not a sequel, it's a.
Wasn't it Clerks 2?
Oh, right. Clerks 2.
Kent Tucker Oddly did Open 5.
Oh, right. That's true. Good memory for all that. Good. I asked the question and you actually had a really.
We're going to be the first three.
Okay. Are you doing Uncle Kent 3?
Yeah. Todd put a sign up sheet outside the premiere last night and.
Had 26 people signed up.
Yeah. Kent 26. Yeah. Everyone was signing up. You want to sign up? Okay.
Yeah. I'll sign up. How do you get like a little cameo and something like that? who do you have to know? How many films do you have to promote? Well,
it's not quick. Yeah. I mean,
is that all? Well, I will actually, and I will even fly out. I'll do whatever I do.
Okay.
I'm happy to support. It would be a blast to. Thank you guys. Todd Rohal, Kent Osborne, finally have you both on the show. It's a treat.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Multiply this so it sounds like a lot of people in here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Thanks, studio audience.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks. Yeah. Seriously. That's brilliant. Thank you.
That's how people applaud.
That's what.
Yeah.
That's what fried pickles will.
But you can do it too. Yours have like. No, Kent, get it right up next to your butt. No, Kent, here, let me get the microphone a little closer to your.
Finally, again, my friend Yen Tan and I sat down together at the Austin Convention Center in one of the lounge areas and just chatted. So if you hear some background noises, you'll know what that's about. This happened again during South by Southwest 2015. We've learned a little bit about what it is to be a filmmaker living in Austin, Texas, in that community. And I know that Yen is on the early process of a new project that he mentions. But he's made a few films in his past. Most recently, back in 2013, Yen directed Pit Stop, which had a bunch of different indie actors, including Amy Simons, who's been on this podcast, including Johnny Mars, who has also been on this podcast and who is going to be returning to the podcast in the coming couple of weeks. But anyway, Yen Tan, first time on the show. Let's go and listen to that. Well, this is one of the byproducts that I really like about coming to a place like this is I can run into you, Yen Tan,
mm-hmm.
and then sit and do a short conversation.
Okay.
You know, with somebody who I've known for a few years now, a little bit, right?
Yeah.
In the context of this festival, mostly.
Right.
And you were with your last film, which was called Pit Stop.
Mm-hmm.
You did get to New York, and I just think we just
crossed.
Unfortunately.
Yeah.
But I was glad you were able to get to New York, mm-hmm. and did that turn out to be a very positive experience?
At New York?
Yeah, showing.
Yeah, no, we screened at New Fest, so it was.
Oh right, that's right.
It's held at Lincoln Center, so we played at Walter Reed, and we sold out the screening, and it was a really good Q&A, and it was a great time.
Yeah, and that's also how you maybe got to know David Nin.
Okay. Actually, David Nin and I. We have like a almost close to 10-year history in terms of we used to work at the same company back when we both lived in Dallas. We worked for Neiman Marcus, and we were also both volunteers at the Asian Film Festival of Dallas.
I see.
Around the same time. So he, I left for Austin and he left for New York,
uh-huh.
and he was going to go into the fashion world. And then I think eventually he
got into the film war instead, right, which he's also really into. And, you know, he ended up being a publicist at the Lincoln Center.
Yeah, very good one. And yeah, you were I assume, doing graphic design or something along those lines for Neiman Marcus? Or
I was actually doing copy editing stuff for the company. So I was never designing anything there.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
How did you end up being the go-to guy for helping design people's movie posters here in town? Because yeah, I remember in our introduction, you were in a bumper. I remember that at South By a couple of years ago. Or
you mean I was in
ago.
A bumper?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. The one that Lauren Wilkinson directed. Yeah.
Oh, she directed that
one? Yeah, she directed that one.
Okay, very good. And then also I remember hearing is like, oh, he's done all these posters. And sure enough, you could just tell after a while
what
a Yantan poster was. They were also good. But how did you get caught up in that?
Because
that
completely fell into it by accident. And I think that's where probably the Neiman Marcus thing kind of helps also, in the sense that even though I wasn't designing for the company, I think it kind of really cultivated my taste in sort of just understanding aesthetics and understanding what looks good and that kind of stuff. So it was one of those things where, you know, I fell into it by accident because, you know, like at that time I was in Dallas and, you know, I knew a lot of people in Texas. And one of my earlier works that I was doing as a favor for friends who have gotten their film to festivals and they didn't have a key art, they didn't know anyone who could design key art, was like David Lowery for St. Nick when he went to South By, and right, Brian Poyser when he went to Sundance for Lovers of Hate, and Clay when he premiered Earthling at South By, for instance. You know, these people that were friends, and it was basically that started it, and it was always like fun and games.
Yeah.
Hobby sort of thing, and it wasn't a career. It wasn't something I thought would be real.
The pressure was, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, totally. So it was like, but the thing is that once those films get into festivals and once people talk about those films, naturally the key art comes into the conversation somehow, you know, and people would ask who worked on this, you know, we want someone to design for our film. And it's like completely word of mouth. I would say almost every single one of my clients who are not friends are all word of mouth.
Right. So you never advertised.
Right. Yeah. I was also worried at some point I needed to do that, but I'm very grateful that I don't really need to like hustle too hard to get people.
That is nice, yeah.
Yeah.
But you've cut down quite a bit, right? Because you say, you only did one poster.
Yeah. No.
This festival.
So yes. Yeah.
We're in Austin, by the way, at the Convention Center in downtown Austin. At South By, and this time you just did one, and you said it was Manson Family Vacation.
Yes, yeah.
For the filmmaker, in this case.
Jay Davis. Yeah.
Yeah. And you've made four features?
Three features. Three features. Yeah.
I think I saw the last. I may have seen all three.
You only saw Pit Stop, right?
No.
We don't have to talk about earlier stuff.
Okay. You know what that code. That's code. That's code for. Yeah. Well, you know.
Okay.
Let's put it this way. Each is a huge learning opportunity and a big creative step forward.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's put it that way, right?
Yeah, some of us are luckier or unluckier to have mistakes still be around.
Uh-huh. I don't know.
In the sense that, you know, like I think there's this whole thing about how sometimes it's a good thing that you don't make your feature until you're older because you don't want to look back and realize you made something really, like, not very good, like, in your early 20s or whatever, and then it's, like, it's a permanent thing, you know?
Yeah,
like,
sure it is.
So,
it's like a tattoo on your career.
Yeah, but you don't think about that when you're in your 20s, so.
Yeah, now more than ever, because everything is permanent.
Right, I mean,
you
exactly.
You can't undo a tweet, really.
Yeah. Right?
You can't undo an IMDb line item or anything.
And yeah,
so,
exactly.
As much as a lot of people would like to curate that, but. But, you know, you may as well embrace it then.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
You know,
totally.
But okay, well, with your Pit Stop anyway, also the cast was really terrific. And I remember, Amy Simons was in it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Amy was in it. Bill Heck, who's a really terrific actor in New York.
Uh-huh.
He's in The Leftovers in season one.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah.
And who else was in it?
Marcus Deonda, which is also does a lot of TV, and he's out in L.A.
Okay.
Yeah.
That necessarily upped your game, just working with such great.
Oh yeah, for sure. Know. Like I think it's one of those things where when you work with like very sort of like seasoned actors, mm-hmm. it's like on an independent level, it's easier to sort of get through your scenes because they're completely prepared.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it was a really touching story, I remember. Very Thank touching. You. Or do you have an idea for the next project?
Or yeah, totally. I went to...
Like, on the...
Is it, very early stages of just like, you know, going out to cast and that kind of stuff.
Oh,
you
really?
Know? Uh-huh, yeah. So it's a project that we went to IFP for last year. And I was
Right. Now it's coming back. You were back again.
Yeah.
Right.
It was the emerging storytellers category.
Well, what can you tell?
The project is called All That We Love, and it's basically, I would say, and it's something I co-wrote with Clay Leifert.
Okay.
It's a comedy drama. What's that?
He was a guest on.
Yeah. I remember listening to his.
Okay. That was an early one. So likewise, I would say, all my entire archive is available, and I'm also the same way.
Yeah.
A little less on the line,
right?
But I would, and I could, I can flip a switch and stop them. But I'm like, well, it is what it is. I wasn't that great at it at the time.
Yeah.
I was learning.
Yeah.
But
I think I think your archive could be something that's very valuable in like 10 years from now or something. When you'll have like a collection of people who are like have turned huge or whatever. You know?
Yeah.
Like,
right. I'm sorry, I interrupted. All That We Love.
Yeah, All That We Love. It's a comedy drama in...
comedy?
Yes.
Oh,
and that's where Clay comes in, too, because
I think
it helps me sort of like balance that.
Right.
It's essentially about a comedy drama about a man. You know, he's in his middle age, and, you know, he loses his dog. And
this is what?
He loses his dog.
Dog.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes.
And it's about kind of like how he comes to terms with that, and also... we learn about his life and the people in his life, and you know, people come back into his life because of the event and all that kind of stuff. So it's like very much like a very observational piece of sort of like the aftermath of like a minor tragedy, which is something that I went through, you know, 2 years ago after, you know, when my dog passed away 2 years ago.
I didn't know.
It was like, it was a really interesting sort of like experience to go through, you know, just in a sense that it's not like this sort of like sad, you know, sobby thing. It was more like, it was very contemplative in its own way, in terms of you know, like being aware of what I was going through, and then sort of being aware of what my friends and family were going through, because we were able to talk about things that were kind of like intimate in nature in some ways, mm-hmm. because of this thing that happened, you know.
Yeah.
And I thought that was interesting that people reacted that way, and yeah, anyways,
so from that stemmed this idea for this film.
Mm-hmm. right,
because people say, well, how do you get inspired, and you just sort of explained.
Yeah totally. I mean, I'm very much like about writing from a place that feels personal,
mm-hmm.
you know, and hopefully, you know, when people see that, they can identify in the same way as well.
Do you think like that as a subject, death is something that's like part of your creative, I don't know.
Yeah, I would say so. It's weird. Like, it's very subconscious. I mean, I personally haven't experienced a lot of like death of loved ones in my life, you know, like my grandparents have passed away, but I wasn't particularly close to them. But I think maybe I'm fascinated by it, because I feel like, I mean, it's not just like a morbid sort of fascination with death, but I think it's the sense that, you know, the awareness of that and how it affects your life when it happens, it's like is something that's always interesting to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah. It sounds like it's coming up in this story to some degree.
Right, yes, yeah.
As well as obviously Step and maybe even earlier films.
Yeah, I think in the earlier films it's stuff that I've touched upon also. I mean, I think my producer Kelly has pointed out something in the things I explore, which is like you know, like I am very much into aftermath stories, like mm-hmm. you know, what happens to people after something really bad happens,
right?
Know, like, and usually you watch films and it's like you watch people going through the good times, and then the you know, something bad happens, and it's and then them having to deal with that,
mm-hmm.
and that's like part of the narrative of the film, you know, like sort of like the beginning, middle, of end of it. And then for me, it's like I like starting off with something bad right away.
Yeah.
And then go from there.
From there, it's right, exactly.
Yeah.
Right. Give the bad news first. And I guess also, was there ever a question or grappling with the idea of working out of LA or New York? Or maybe you did. I don't know.
No, I haven't done that yet. I mean, I think at this point, it's probably, I'll be very surprised if that even happens anymore. I love both cities, and I have a lot of friends at both places. So I think as a result of that, I don't feel like I need to live there anymore.
Yeah,
you know.
And I guess I did sort of mean live there too, but you know, because I mean, you're right. I mean, in terms of the kind of films you make, you could make them anywhere.
Yeah.
Right. One just sort of leans on resources that may exist in those two towns.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, that does exist here. I mean, you got the whole infrastructure here too.
Mm-hmm,
right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, absolutely. I mean, it's very community oriented here in Austin. It's very much, it's very easy to just sort of be able to meet, you know, filmmakers and cultivate not just a professional relationship, but cultivate actual friendships and kind of like we kind of become this support group for each other and that kind of stuff, and being able to talk to each other about the stuff that we're going through professionally and, you know, with some friends with what we're going through personally as well.
Yeah.
So I like that kind of the blur of that lines, because I feel like ultimately this kind of stuff feeds into the stuff we're working on, you know?
Yeah.
And I think it's really easy also for us to sort of get together and meet each other and stuff, you know? Like in Austin, it's like you just drive, get into the car for 5 minutes, and then you see that other person or whatever, you know?
Yeah. I get that sense too, you know, when I come here. It's very true.
Right.
It's very
okay.
Appealing.
Yeah.
It's one of my reasons why I actually probably more than the films is, is seeing people that, you know, I've met over the years, and I've talked to a number of the folks that are, well, I talked to a number of actors this time.
Yeah.
People that I keep seeing popping up in many Austin-based films, and I'm like, I just want to kind of talk to what that experience is like, cobbling together a career in a town like this.
Right.
And you're at South by because you are mentoring or
yes, speaking? I'm mentoring as a screenwriters. So that's just a matter of like
speed dating. Yeah.
Hour and a half session meeting, like, you know, anywhere from 6 to 8 people.
Yeah.
And yeah, talking to people.
It's 3, so
okay. All right.
But what? So I want to respect your time, but this was perfect. This was great. And when you're ready, and obviously it'll be next year at this time or sometime.
If things go well,
and I assume they will, but we'll keep the fingers crossed. Regardless, just
okay. Thank you. Thanks, Adam.
My pleasure.
Bye.
So you may recall a couple of weeks ago I did a live podcast dedicated to the Montclair Film Festival, which was about to start. Well, now it's going on. In fact, as I record this, we're now, I guess, leading into the final weekend of the festival. It ends Sunday, May 10th, Mother's Day. I got out there a couple of times to the festival, most recently the other night, to see Liz Garbus's documentary, which is called What Happened, Miss Simone, which was incredible. It was so good. I'm so glad I went and made the trip and I saw it. And Liz, if you don't know her work, she has a rich catalog of films she's directed, including one of her earliest films in 1998, The Farm, Angola, USA. She made a documentary called Bobby Fischer Against the World, which was really good, really compelling. Did a film called There's Something Wrong with Aunt Diane, which I have to say, I think it's on HBO. And so if you have HBO Now or Go, please do check it out if you haven't seen it. It's incredible story. And now, what happened to Simone, about the life and the career of Nina Simone, which, for me, I didn't know a lot. I have to tell you, even though I'm a huge fan of Nina's music, I didn't really know her story. And I couldn't have expected a better film. That's how good it was. So I'm really excited that Liz is going to be back on the podcast very soon. We're going to do another live podcast at DCTV. Please stick around for dates. It should be in June. The film is been picked up by Netflix, and I'm very excited that we're going to do if everything works out, Liz is really into it, and then we'll invite some more guests, and that'll be sometime next month. Date to be announced soon. So if you're in the New York area, please do consider coming out for that. I'll post all details as soon as I have more information for you. But then you'll hopefully see What Happened, Miss Simone, because it really is one of the best documentaries I've seen in a while. I'm going to try to get out there one more time because the Montclair Film Festival, and I'm not getting anything for this, folks. This is just because I'm looking at it. It's nearby. And it just has a fabulous program. So it's worth the trip. You know, it's I've driven out there, but I also took the train out there. And for the price of literally a round-trip ticket from New York City to Montclair, which, by the way, is only about, I think, 30 minutes, it's the price of a movie ticket, about the same. So it's really great. And you get the festival experience. So if you're free around this weekend, I think it still might be worth your time to check out the Montclair Film Festival. But do spend time with your mom. I'm very grateful that I still have my mom. She's not the mom I can't spend the kind of time I used to spend with her, because my mother has progressed very, very, very far into dementia. And but still the lovely, she's still the loving mom I always had, though. She's just, it's just harder to have a conversation with her, I guess is what I could say, but I'm grateful to have her in my life. So give your mom a hug. Hey, not to get morose. That's my Mother's Day bit, okay? This week, we're a bunch of announcements about coming festivals and series, including the LA Film Festival has announced their slate. Rooftop Films announced theirs. Spectacular slate. Can't wait. We'll talk a little bit about that maybe on the next podcast. We'll hopefully bring on somebody from Rooftop. We'll get somebody from BAM, or some of the programmers from BAM, like we did last year, to talk about BAM Cinema Fest, which also announced their slate. So, oh, and by the way, Uncle Kent, too, is going to be on the slate for BAM Cinema Fest. So there will be a New York screening coming this summer of Uncle Kent, too. I don't have the schedules yet for these. We just know the film titles. And by the way, I should also mention that Kreisha is going to be screening at Rooftop Films and at BAM Cinema Fest. And of course, Kreisha is going to Cannes in next week as well. So it's just very excited for that film. And I'm a big advocate for that film as well. And hopefully we'll bring on the people from that film very soon to talk about it. So you know a little bit more why I'm advocating so strongly for Kreisha. But it is one of my favorite films. So that's that. That's the show. Thank you for listening. I noticed a few more people have gone on to the iTunes store, found FilmWax, and have put very nice things up on there and given it a star rating, but there's still way too few. I have to tell you, I'm a little disappointed. I'm like, I know there are hundreds and hundreds of listeners, thousands, of course. There's even thousands of listeners who have checked out many shows, and really, if even only a small percentage of you should take a minute of your time, go on to iTunes and give me a star rating, give me a little comment, something, just give me something. Most importantly of all, of course, just share the information. You can find us on Facebook. We're at facebook.com/filmwaxradio. We're also on Twitter @filmwaxradio. You can find us on Instagram. You can go to filmwaxradio.com, get all your information right there. There's a link to the archive of past shows. But, of course, if you're an iTunes subscriber to the podcast, you have a majority of shows are available to you right there on your device, whatever you're listening to the show on. So thank you for that very much. Thanks for listening to this show. It's called Film Wax Radio. It's presented by Rooftop Films. My name is Adam Chartoff, and we'll be back soon with an all-new episode of the podcast. Thank you so much. Cinnamon, where you gonna run to? Cinnamon, where you gonna run to? Where you gonna run to? All on that day, will I run to the rock? Please hide me and run to the rock. Please hide me and run to the rock. Please hide me, Lord, all on that day. But the rock cried out, I can't hide you, the rock cried out. I can't hide you, the rock cried out. I ain't gonna hide you, God, all on that day. I said, rock.